This is an alert. Please stand by for an important situational awareness report from Civil Defense Radio. Again, this is an alert. Important information to follow.
Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. In fact, many of these threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. This propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation. And here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center, deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. And this is SITREP number 4, and the title of it is Post-Election Threat Assessment. And let me introduce to you my guest co-host and friend, Matthew West.
Preston, as always, it's a great joy to be on your show. I really like getting the message out to the public out there and our audience. And, I'm coming from the heart of Texas here. Just outside of Austin, Texas. And, this is going to be interesting what we're going to talk about tonight. And some of the things we've talked about in the past are kind of coming to revelation. And
yeah, it
really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we get into our subject, I would like to ask you to help us with the almighty algorithms. Please like, share, and comment on our episodes. And please share. You know, we want to get this information out because people need to hear this. You may hear it from some other places, but you won't hear it from many. So, the more that you send this stuff to your friends, the sooner or later, you know, they're gonna say, oh, okay, yeah, that's what's going on. So there's some heavy stuff coming, and we're just gonna touch it real briefly tonight. There's a lot more, but you will be able to find in the show notes the links to the reports that we're going to be talking about tonight. And it's important that you look at this stuff and you understand that these documents are not large and they're easy to read. So please get in there and do your own research, because it is important for you to understand what's going on. And it is mightily, mightily dangerous to our nation what is preparing to happen next week during the election and following. So please be informed and help inform others by sharing our program and click like. You know, those algorithms, they help us out a lot. All right. So, We have a couple different reports. One of them is this report by the New Jersey Department of Homeland Security and Preparedness. This is a supplemental threat assessment for 2020 and 2021. And there's a lot of information in here for a very small document. I think it's probably, what, about 10 pages? Somewhere in there.
Somewhere around there.
12, 13 pages. So it's not very big. But Matthew, why don't you go ahead and kick us off on this New Jersey threat assessment?
You know, you look at the threat assessment and, you know, first of all, let's lead into COVID-19. I mean, we can't help but talk about COVID-19. And how this is altering the 2020 presidential election. First of all, you know, the assessment talks about the mail-in voting. You know, it goes into talking about, you know, the local response on health mandates, as far as restrictions, supply chains, unemployment. I mean, it's a very good sit-rep report that they did. And again, you know, looking at what's happening in Philadelphia, because this came out September 2020.
Right.
So right. You look at, they're talking about the NRS. You look at what's been changing as far as how ballots are being cast. A lot of the Supreme Courts around the states are hearing some of the cases in different areas about how they've changed their voting because of COVID-19, or at least that's what they're saying, why they changed their voting habits up, you know, going into mail-in ballots. So this is going to be interesting to see how this sit rep that was done in September is going to pan out next week or the next week or two. So, well, no, it will be next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a few short days away, you know, and I've said it here before, and I think you and I have talked about it before. This COVID-19 was not, in my opinion, and it's a pretty informed opinion, it was not an accident. All this was coordinated with the neo-Marxist insurgents that are active in the streets today. Now, there's a lot of innocent people that are caught up in this, thinking that they're doing something humanitarian and trying to make change and all this. But there's evidence that points to all this violence and stuff, and even the instantaneous flash mobs around the country has been pre-planned for a long time by neo-Marxist insurgents. And they just took advantage of a situation, and that's what they do. They wait for these types of things to happen. Now, the assessment from New Jersey says that domestic extremists, primarily anarchists, anti-government, and racially motivated, will continue to manipulate national incidents such as the COVID-19 pandemic and the 2020 presidential election and civil unrest to further their agendas and remain a threat. That is very real. This threat, it's not going away come November 3rd. It is going to continue. Matter of fact, it will probably increase, because if Trump is looking like he's going to win, then they're going to ratchet up their violence. If Biden wins, then they may ratchet down their violence for a short period, but they're anarchists and they are communists. So these people will do nothing but continue with this violence and mayhem, no matter what. The assessment also says that racially motivated extremists and militia extremists will focus on publicly opposing Antifa-related groups and seeking confrontations resulting in street-level violence. And it goes on to say, as a result, domestic extremists will take advantage of regional differences and continuing uncertainty stemming from the convergence of these national issues to plot and conduct attacks and encourage their supporters to do the same. So that, you know, they're gonna continue, and it's unfortunate that we have this. There's been, and I was one for a long time. You know, I was a federal officer. You know, carried a badge and a gun, and I was told by some friends when I lived in San Antonio about some of this stuff that's going on. And I said, no, you know, that's conspiracy theory. Well, guess what? You know, 10, almost 15 years ago, they were saying, you know, what was going on. And some of that stuff is coming true today. It's hard to believe that I was being told that long ago, and reality is slapping me in the face. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, talking about the racial motivated violence, and we just saw this again a couple of days ago in with Philadelphia. You know, the first thing they did is put a headline out, black man shot by police, and instantaneously riots and looting erupted. And here's what I found interesting about that is last night I was just looking on the internet to try to find some of the live scanner feeds coming out of Philadelphia just to hear what's going on. Well, first of all, they were all shut down. They're all out of service.
Really?
The time period I was looking, and I don't know if it was just too much bandwidth, it crashed the servers or what, but as I was going through there and I just Googled Philadelphia police scanner feed, I actually found some information on some groups that were given instructions on how to go in and monitor the feeds, and that people were already sending out messages the minute the news got out that a person was shot and it was a black individual. They started mobilizing people to already go to preset locations and to start the rioting and start the looting and start the civil unrest. So this was already in the works. This tells you that there's stuff behind the scenes, that people are sitting there ready to pounce the moment something like this happens. Before any of the facts come out, it's ready, it's orchestrated. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, which we've talked about time and time again, that some people just don't believe is happening. There's motivators behind this, and not good motivators either. They're trying to disrupt all this and to get the nation into chaos. And the closer we get to an election, the worse it's going to get. You know, I think Philadelphia is really the kindling to the fire. We're seeing it, you know, we've seen it months upon months in Portland and Seattle, to the point where it's not even being covered in the news. It's old news. I saw an interview on Fox News today where the police chief is begging people to stop the violence, that it's gone on enough. And I think they finally are fed up with it.
But which one, Portland or Seattle?
Portland.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, this is highly organized. And let me tell you that there's foreign entities that are involved with this. And let me just quote a little piece from this New Jersey assessment. And it says, nation state threat actors expanding disinformation campaigns that exploit COVID-19, election security, and civil unrest will persist into 2021 to exacerbate domestic tensions and challenge U.S. global credibility. In August, the director of National Counterintelligence and Security Center reiterated that China, Iran, and Russia remain primary counterintelligence threats to the 2020 election due to their use of disinformation and other means to divide the country and undermine U.S. democratic institutions and government agencies. That's foreign actors. These people are also throwing money in. Tonight I heard that there's money coming in not only from Russia and China, but from Venezuela as well. So these people, these Marxists, are fomenting revolution, literal revolution. It's called color revolution here in the United States. It's happened in other countries where they've had different colors. I think it was Greece, possibly, or Ukraine, somewhere in there. They used the color orange. Everybody wore orange, you know. So that's why they call it a color revolution, because everybody wears the same color. So what color is the dominant color in the streets of America? Black.
Black.
This is a black revolution. These things are organized.
Matter of fact, there's former generals that U.S. Army general who is over this one organization that's providing psychological operations assistance to this neo-Marxist insurgency. It's a globalist Marxist insurgency, and their goal, period, is to overthrow the establishment, overthrow the government, overthrow, it doesn't matter if it's Trump or Biden, they're going to overthrow the government to get what they want, which is a socialist empire in the United States.
You're right. And just to clarify on that, you know, we talk about this being a black revolution. You know, we're looking at Antifa, and when they're out there on the streets, we're not talking about race here. We're talking about, you know, that is the theme. It's a dark theme. They use it to hide, but it's their rallying colors too. Like you said,
yes.
Other groups, it's red, it's orange. Here in America, it's the color black. And, you know, unfortunately, they're hiding this under so many umbrellas, and no pun intended on that. You know, Black Lives Matter, you know, any other cause you want, you know, civil rights causes, what they're trying to do this, but it's nothing close to that. I mean,
no.
How do you do a cause to go wipe out a Walmart store or a Foot Locker? Where's that in your cause? What is that helping?
Well, there's a number of various entities or segments to these groups. There's the neo-Marxists that are actually the organizers and the instigators. Then they have criminal elements. They have the really peaceful, innocent people who are getting caught up in this because, you know, social media is all the buzz, and this is what's popular. We've got to get out there and show our support. And those people, unfortunately, they're being duped, and they're being used as useful idiots, to coin a Marxist term. So they are, unfortunately, part of this, and many of those will be encouraged to participate in the looting, in the rioting, in the violence, and some of them will be victims of actual injury and possible death. Depends on what level of violence they end up participating in.
Well, when you got people running over cops and pickup trucks, you know, that kind of tells you that the level they're taking it to right now.
That's just minor right now.
Yes.
It's going to increase. It's going to increase.
Well, and you talked about, you know, third party foreign countries intervening. We already know that last election, they had their fingers in it. There's already been reports of this election of Iran directly trying to instigate people that thinking that the Proud Boys were interfering with everything, where threats are going out to voters that, you know, I know who you voted for, and, you know, or I know who you're going to vote for, and I'm going to do bodily harm to you. Well, they found out those are all coming from foreign actors.
Yeah.
From Iran, from China, from Russia. But again, people don't see that, especially depending where they get their news from and where they get the media from. If it is true news or true media, or if they're just looking at social media and going off what people's opinions are, really has an effect of how this plays out to other people. And I say that because I think there's very few people that actually go out and seek the truth.
Yeah.
What they do is they rely on their friend of a friend of a friend to tell them what they saw on Facebook.
They
don't know how true it is. And we already know that social media, Facebook and Twitter, are being throttled or flat out censored by the very people that own them.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you say, okay, this information that we're being fed is not propaganda? Because a lot of it is.
So the next report that we're going to talk about is this one right here. It's produced by the organization Unconstrained Analytics. It's Insurrection and Violence, a Citizen's Guide. Now this is 49 pages, and it's very simple. It's very easy to read, but it is very important for you to read. Let me read you the chapter titles. Okay. Chapter one is the introduction, of course. Chapter two, the situation. And chapter three, what can I do? Chapter four, how can I help? And chapter five are resources that are referred to in these other chapters. Now, the organization unconstrainedanalytics.org is a great organization who does a lot of deep analysis on these types of things. They produced a report that we talked about before. It was re-remembering the misremembered left, and that was a fantastic report. I did I think it was sit rep number two on that one. Was it two or one? I can't remember right now, but it was just on the introduction, and it was, or the executive summary, I'm sorry, but it was a dynamite report, and these guys do a lot of them. What we're going to do is we're going to get into a little bit about the threats, because we've talked about them already, but what I want to do mostly is I want to cover the chapters 3 and 4, because those are, I think, important. The chapters 1 and 2 are important for you to read. So please get this from the link that will be provided with this video. Or if you're listening on podcast, it'll be on this show notes and on the podcast. So we're gonna just cover some of these areas in chapters 3 and 4. What can we do? What can we do? Because let's say it's after the election and violence is increasing. The numbers of people are gathering by the thousands at the park in front of the White House, and the DC police have been told to stand down by Mayor Bowser, and the only people that are doing anything are the federal law enforcement, the Secret Service, the park police, and others. So, but not only that, there is violence starting to happen in cities and some of the suburbs and even in some of the rural areas. So what do we do?
You know, that's a good question. I live in a rural area, and we just had one of our local gun shops burglarized and wiped out. Which is kind of a shock for the community I live in, because that's a pretty well-known area. I mean, it's very well watched. They know that there's security cameras up everywhere, yet they were brazen enough to do it. And this isn't the first gun store burglary we've had in the metro area. There's been several in the last few months of some high-profile gun shops, and they're stealing some pretty high-profile weaponry. And you know, this isn't just we're going to do a smash and grab a few things. They're wiping the stores out, which tells you that they're arming themselves, that they're taking these arms. No, it's not a drug deal, you know, that they're trying to get some quick cash on. No, this is they're starting a weapons cache.
Yeah.
What it is.
Yeah. Well, there's a criminal element that's part of this, and they're gangs. The Mexican cartels, I hate to say this, brother, but the Mexican cartels control that I-5 or I-35 corridor. And the Zetas and other entities are working heavily in that area, especially around Austin. There's a big Hispanic community there. And I bet you have some horse racing going on there as well.
Oh, one or two tracks.
Yeah. Well, I mean Mexican style horse racing. Yeah.
Like I said, yeah. There's one or two tracks.
Yeah. So with that style of horse racing comes cartels. Actually, the cartels come first. But so there's a lot of criminal element that's in league with this neo-Marxist insurgency. They're on the fringe, but they're fellow travelers. They want to see disruption so that they can do what they want to do, and they can make money. They can become better armed, things like that. So what can we do? Be ready. Build your action plan. Some of the violence has been conducted by opportunistic criminals, like they're in Austin area. But the main driver behind the violence is the NAIS, which is North American Insurgency Syndicate, which is what these guys are calling this group. And it's a syndicate. It's a insurgency syndicate. Many of these pre-planned riots infiltrated by revolutionary cadre were used as cover to conduct targeted attacks. The insurgency is rapidly expanding in size, scope, and intensity, and so too is the violence. Remember that you are not alone in this endeavor. Many of your fellow citizens are likewise concerned and have taken rational and practical steps to ensure their safety. An old adage tells us, perfect is the enemy of good. Do your research and build a basic plan that you and your family can follow. It can always be improved later. The important thing is to take action now and get a plan. So there's some instructions on developing an action plan. They say that it should be tailored to your specific lifestyle, pattern of life, family situation, location, and risk assessment. Now, you really have to take a look around and see what your risk assessment is. Now, if you live in downtown Austin near 6th Street, you're going to want to have a high level of awareness, super high level of awareness, because your threat level is going to be a lot higher than it would be if you lived out in the country. So, this system was created in consultation with U.S. Special Operations veterans who routinely traveled to dangerous and austere locations to conduct high-risk missions against the most violent terrorists and insurgent groups on the globe. They are masters at building contingency plans for emergency situations and have brought their expertise and experience to this project. The basic elements of an emergency system, an emergency action system, your action plan, are introduced on the next page. We will cover each of the components in depth later in the chapter. Okay, this is chapter 23. Page 23. We're going to page 24 now with some specifics. All right. So there's 3, 6, 7, 8 different areas that they are suggesting you take note of. 1, situational awareness. Every good operation begins with accurate intelligence, and so should you. Establish multiple sources of reliable and competing information. Don't just get it from one political side. Get it from both, because you're going to find stuff in there that will be nuggets that you can pull out. Even though you see the bias, there will be things in there. And there have been a lot of reports over the last, let's say, 2 years that have had good nuggets in there that have given us an idea of what is to come. Analysis, risk assessment, that's 2. Now that you understand the insurgent capabilities and patterns, determine how does it apply to you, your family, and your community. You should build on this thing in a prescribed way. All right, if you're by yourself, it's you, your neighborhood, your community. If it's you and your family, it's you and your family, your neighborhood, and your community. It should build in that way. Yes.
You're talking about doing your risk assessment. It's very important when you talk about transportation. A lot of people in highly populated, highly densely populated areas like Austin has gotten into, it's turned into a little LA or a little Chicago or, a little New York. It's high rises now. Public transportation is a major way of getting to and from places, ride sharing, and people on bicycles, pedestrians. So in your contingency plan, how are you going to maneuver if you have to get out when those are shut down? Because that is going to be the focus of a lot of the unrest, is they're going to shut down transportation. That is a key, key factor in any movement like this, is shutting down the means of transportation.
Yes, you're right. And this plan covers all that. Okay. The third step is action plan. Make your emergency plan and develop most likely contingency courses of action. Think of this as your family emergency operations plan. Next is logistics. Gather the resources and equipment you will need to support your action plan and most likely contingencies. Next is communications. Develop an action plan with the idea that your cell phone will not work. Build your plan to have alternate communications, technical and non-technical. All right. So, ham radio, you have family radio systems, you have FMRS, that's family radio system. And then you have GMRS, that's a next higher up. There's like four different ones and I can't think of what they are right now. I got a block.
Yeah, multi-user radio system, MERS, GMRS, FRS.
Yeah, yeah. But a couple of them you have to have licenses for. One, all you do is send in an application with $75 and it covers the whole family to use. And that's, I believe that's GMRS.
That's your GMRS. And you can operate up to 50 watts of power. So,
And you can reach out a long way. A friend of mine lives, he's over 35 miles away. And on GMRS, we can communicate. So it has a good reach. And if it's hitting the right repeater, then you can go even farther. Communications, okay, coordination. Reach out to an extended family, friends, and your network to inform and help organize mutual support, early warning, and emergency assistance. In other words, this is where civil defense comes in. You organize your family, friends, and neighbors, and, get this like a super duper neighborhood watch going, all right? Because you guys need to work in concert to protect your neighborhood, all right? Rehearsals. Educate yourself and your family members on your new equipment, vital skills, and emergency procedures. Practice the skills, techniques, and procedures that your plan have, all right? And then the last one is review and reassess. This is important, to make sure that you got everything going the way it should. Preparation is an ongoing effort. As the situation changes, so too should your action plan and level of vigilance. All right. Now, that's it in a nutshell. And that's what this chapter 3 goes more in depth on. And then chapter 4 has a little bit different scope. But, many of you are going to have firearms. Make sure that you listen to my last podcast on the 6 basics of preparedness, because I cover firearms in there pretty extensively. How much ammo you should have for each type of weapon, things like that. And, and let me say again, keep your finger off the trigger. I've seen people in gun shows behind the counter selling guns, pick up a gun with their finger on the trigger. And I told this one young man, I said, get your finger off the trigger. He goes, it's not loaded. I said, it doesn't matter. You just trained yourself to pick up the gun with your finger on the trigger. And his dad, he knew he was wrong. He didn't say a thing for me chastising his son.
never, never hold back on a safety issue. All right. So that's important, right, Matt?
And I'll affirm that. Of course, this is the safety manager, risk manager coming out of me. But, you know, talking about having a plan, that chapter that Preston was just reading out of, doing the overview, every Friday night football game, part of my job is I have to have a plan. I have to have an operational plan and what to do if things go wrong. If there's a sudden thunderstorm that comes up and we got lightning coming down, you know, I got to get everybody out of, you know, metal bleachers to safety. If an active attacker situation, you know, we have our police officers there. So about 4 or 5 days prior to a game or any large event, part of my job is sit there and come up with an ops plan and make sure everybody that is involved in the game, from the coaches all the way to the police officers working security, even to the custodial staff, we have to meet, we have to get a game plan and reassess that. For the most part, a lot of it could be almost a rubber stamp type plan because of the type of activities going on, little changes, but you do have to change something every Friday night, because whether it's new officers coming into work, the weather changes, or there's a threat, you know, we have a game this Friday, you got Halloween coming up, on Saturday, but then you've also got all the stuff going on with the elections, and between tonight and Tuesday night, there's no telling what's going to happen. So I got to be prepared, you know, from after that, we still have games going all the way to the end of November, how this is going to impact public safety and, you know, throw COVID into that, how to do the best safety precautions on that. And it's a never ending thing. And that your personal action plan has to be reassessed on a continuous basis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like anything else. It can't sit on the shelf and gather dust. It needs to be looked at on a regular basis. I know I've kind of monopolized the time here, and you've had an opportunity to interject a little bit, but I want to say again, this report is really good because it offers a lot of guidance for what you can do. Matter of fact, one of the things I like about it is it says that you have to prepare your home for 2 weeks of self-reliance and isolation, just in case, which means that you have to have certain things in your house to last 2 weeks without going out to the store. So that's important. That's something that you should have, because whether you live in an apartment or a house or on a farm, you need to have minimum of 2 weeks worth of supplies that you can get by with for that period of time. I would like to see more homes have at least 30 days, because that is a lot better chance of survival, especially, you know, those people who got taken out by Hurricane Sandy up in New Jersey and some areas outside of there. It was weeks, it was actually months of uncomfortable living for them, because they didn't have anything. They didn't have anything stored. They didn't have anything, any preparedness. They lived in damaged homes for a long period of time until things could get fixed. That's, you know, one of those things.
And on that point too, you know, not only do you need to be prepared at home, but for those of you that are, you know, back at work, working in the office, wherever you may be, you need a get home kit. A backpack with enough essentials that if you're work, you can grab it and you can get out of there. It does no good if it's in your car if you can't get to your car.
Yeah.
You need one in your car as well. I carry a 3-day pack that's got 3 days worth of supplies. I also have a pack that I keep in my office that mm-hmm. could get me home, you know, within a day, or if I can get to my car. But I've got a variety of different go bags, from small ones with just small first aid essentials, all the way to, like I said, a 3-day pack that if I had to hoof it on foot, I could get home, especially from where I work. It would probably take me about a day and a half if I had to walk
yeah.
through the brush and everything. I could do it, but you know, I'm going to have my supplies with me. And I'm telling you right now, people, be prepared. Okay.
Yeah.
This isn't going to go away anytime soon. In fact, it's going to get worse before it gets better. This is some things that we're seeing that we haven't seen really since the 60s, since civil rights movement. I think this is going to be worse, in my opinion, because of technology aiding these people. The secure messaging systems that they're using makes it hard for people to eavesdrop and find out what's going on. I will make a note. I'm a very big fan of having a police scanner. They're a little pricey, but they're worth a good investment, especially the ones. Pick up some of the digital systems that law enforcement using, but it also picks up, you can set it on scan all frequencies. And I've noticed that a lot, especially in our area, a lot of those that are causing civil unrest are using the Chinese ham radios that they're not encrypted. They're analog systems, meaning they can be picked up by an ordinary police scanner that you can buy on the internet for $300. So you can find out what's going on in your area. Most law enforcement, if it gets to that situation, they have the ability to encrypt. So you wouldn't be able to hear what's going on. But up until that time, you can hear everything that's going on in your region, in your immediate area. But you can also pick up on other radio traffic as well. You talked about a ham radio. You know, you need to have a license to operate a ham radio, but you don't have to have one to listen in to what's going on.
Right.
And
right.
We're get a shortwave radio. They're getting harder and harder to find because they're not as popular as they used to be. But a shortwave radio not only allows you to pick up ham radio operators talking, but they'll also let you listen in to radio stations from all over the world. They're periodic on their time and dates when they broadcast. But I used to listen to the BBC as a kid to see what's going on over in Europe, you know, that we don't get fed over here in the United States. So invest in a good good shortwave radio, because internet may not be available. And then are you going to be able to trust what you see on the internet from here on out? That's my other issue too.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as radios, you can go on Amazon and get a Baofeng R5 with an extended battery. You don't want the little one that's this long. You want the one that's like that says 8W, 8 watt. That one puts out 8 watts of power rather than 5. And it's a good radio, and it's less than $40. It's less than $40, and you got a radio that in an emergency you can use, okay? And what's nice about these radios is they're multiple channels. They're ham, they're GMRS, and they're FRS. They have FRS channels in them also. There's at least 21 channels, because most FRS radios have 21 channels. So you've got the ability, 8 watts versus the little junky half watt. Yeah. So, you know, I've used these on protective details before. I gave my partner one, and he was almost a mile away. We were in a loose cordon around this protectee's house, and we were in mobile exterior security, and so I could talk to him and find out what was going on where he was at, and I had no problem. And that was just FRS, because I had power and he had power. There were 2 8-watt radios. So it's worth it. So
as a ham radio operator myself, that's what I carry in my car. I have a Baofeng that I carry. Yeah. I have a program with all my local ham repeaters, as well as the FRS and GMRS channels, the older multi-user radio systems that are open. You don't have to have a license anymore on those.
Yeah.
And they work great. We were on a trip up in the mountains of Colorado, and depending where we were on the mountain, you know, if you hit a gap, I was talking to people in our caravan up to 5 miles away in mountainous areas.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, granted, we both had mobile magnetic mount antennas. So that's another advantage of those radios is that if you need to get extended range, you can put an external antenna on those, especially in an emergency situation.
Yeah. 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 I have one on my truck I have a small radio. I can't remember the brand, but that's what I use in my truck. But they are easily obtained. So we're fast getting out of time. But another good thing about this report, in case you need help, there's checklists. There's checklists in here. And guess what? Matthew already talked about it. They talk about bug out bags. They talk about get home bags. I've had a get home bag ever since I worked in DC and got married to my wife. I've had a get home bag. I built one for her and I built one for me. I kept it in my locker in my cubicle, and she kept hers under her desk in her office. And the plan was, we were hooking up with a friend of mine who also lived in lives in the same area as we do, and he's a former ranger, and him and another guy, we were, you know, the four of us, we were going to be trucking. You know, we figured 4 or 5 days to get home from DC. Hey, we had everything we needed to get home, and in whatever situation we found ourselves in, but we weren't going to stay in DC. That was for darn sure. So this report, the link for it will be out there, but if you want to do a Google search, you can find it, or you can go to unconstrainedanalytics.org and look for this document there. It's right on their homepage, I believe, and so it's available, and I highly, highly recommend it. It's something that everybody needs to read and understand the threat and what is coming. Because it is coming.
It is
coming.
Unfortunately. And
yeah,
you can't stick your head in the sand too much longer. It's already knocking on our doors. It's starting to sprawl out in suburbia and out into the rural areas now. So be prepared for it. That's all I can say. I think we can make it through. It's going to be a rough few months, if not a rough year. But, you know,
yeah,
if you're prepared, you're ready for it, you know, humans are resilient if they're prepared.
Exactly.
If they're not prepared, they're not going to make it.
Well, if you're not prepared, you end up being the victim, and you don't want to be a victim. You want to be somebody who's got their stuff together and they are somewhat prepared for what's to come. By listening to this video or this podcast, whichever it is, you're already informed. You are part of the informed class in America. So use that knowledge and inform others. Share this episode and help us get the word out, because people need to listen and understand. I've got family members, some in-laws that think, Preston's just crazy, you know? But, you know, when COVID hit, they took a step back and they said, well, maybe not. Well, you know, now COVID's a little kind of an old-fashioned thing, you know, but this next thing that's coming, hey, they're going to be singing a different tune, I have a feeling. This is real. I hope it's not. I hope it's not.
Let's hope we're wrong, yes.
Everything that we're seeing right now is pointing to this thing being a major, major thing. There's going to be, I hate to predict, but there's going to be some major things happening. Hopefully the administration will be able to stem the violence and the advancement of this evil threat, and everything will get back to normal, so to speak.
Well, and I hope a lot more governors do what Governor Abbott here in Texas has done and has put the guard on standby to be prepared to roll out to cities on election night. I know he's getting a lot of criticism for it, but again, coming from the preparedness standpoint and what we've seen already going on in just the so-called protest on Black Lives Matters and how violent they get and how quickly. You know, we're realizing that there are forces behind this that are pushing this, that are driving this civil unrest. And I think Governor Abbott's doing the right thing of mobilizing and getting everybody ready and in place. If they don't need them, excellent. You know what? That's it's better to have something and not need it than need it and not have it, as the saying goes. So, you know, hats off to Governor Abbott on that. I think he's doing the right thing. In fact, I think probably needs more than 1,000 National Guardsmen called up, depending on the cities, because they're talking Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas. I think El Paso even is in there. And, you know, those are major metropolitan, you know, 2 million plus, 5 million plus cities. So, you know, they're trying to get prepared. And the job is, they're not going to, there was rumor that, you know, those troops are going to be stationed at the polling centers, and that's not the case. Abbott has come out and said to the media that the intention is to help the locals when violence breaks out. And again, it's not if. I strongly believe that it's going to be when.
And when is probably, if not Tuesday night, it'll be Wednesday.
I'll say and Wednesday, Thursday at the latest.
It will be worse than what we've seen so far. Portland will be a kindergarten picnic compared to what's coming. And I really believe that, because the real violence hasn't started yet, because the people with guns haven't come out yet. They have their armies, and they haven't come out yet. There's been a few assassinations. There's been you know, some minor things happen like that, but we haven't seen their army come out yet.
Well, and skimming through the headlines here, you know, there's again, they've already found another vehicle in some of the civil unrest this week that has explosives in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In Philly.
Philly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And this is the first time, you know, they've Seattle, Portland.
Right.
They've got it. Luckily before anybody got hurt or killed, but it's just a matter of time. You know, again, you're looking at these gun shop burglaries where they're clearing them out. You know, that concerns me as a police officer and looking at what those weapons are going to be used for potentially. Again, these are people that aren't going to be selling it on the street. This ain't black market stuff.
No.
Somebody that's got a purpose and a mission, especially the weapons that they took. I mean, that's where I buy some of my firearms. I know, in fact, one of my firearms is from the owner that I carry today, and I know the weaponry they have there. And let's just put it this way. I wish I had a bunch of it in my stockpile. It's that serious of stuff that was taken that concerns me if it's used against the public or used against law enforcement. It's very dangerous armament if it's in the wrong hands.
Yeah. And it's coming, unfortunately. But, you know, I think we're past our time limit here. We've been a little long, but civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. And be sure to check out our regular postings at Facebook, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And also our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And I wish to thank my friend Matt for being with us again today.
Always a pleasure.
And we like to thank you, our friends out there who are listening to us and now watching us on YouTube. And we really appreciate you guys being with us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.
God bless as well. Take care.
This is an alert. Please stand by for an important